Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 6, Episode 21, Let It Bleed, written by Sarah Gamble and directed by John F. Showalter. The penultimate episode of Season 6. Who even says penultimate? Apparently I do. So we get the fallout of the man who would be king. Cass ignored the warning sign, and he's too far in it to protect everyone. What fate threatened him with a few episodes back is now happening to him. He has nowhere left to go but to plow ahead with his plans and just ignore everything else and hope it all works out. And Sam and Dean are too busy with the distraction that Crowley throws their way to even figure out what Cass's bigger intent is. He wants purgatory, but why? What for? Oh, yeah, they keep forgetting about all these the souls warnings they've gotten now from pretty much everybody. We also get the very final ending of Dean's relationship with Lisa, twisted into yet another horrific burden of guilt he has to carry by Crowley. Yay! In which Dean basically does to Lisa and Ben what Cass has done to him all season long. Sacrifice everything to protect them from ever having to know the bigger horror of his life. Cass has hidden the bigger horror of his life for the last year from them. What this is all about, this power grab, and what Raphael plans to do restarting the apocalypse, and all of that, they still have no idea. And he doesn't ever want them to, which is just stupid, right? We all agree? Okay. So, we'll yell a lot as we go through this one. You know it's going to be bad when Castiel is included under the monsters list on the Super Wiki page. It's just grim. But that's where we are. And yes, Sarah Gamble wrote the penultimate episode of the season as showrunner because Kripke wrote the finale. Yes, Kripke wrote the finale to Season 6. It was his final episode he wrote for Supernatural. And he had a hand in everything that happened in Season 6. We like to blame Sarah for this nonsense, but Kripke was involved in it too. Let's not forget that. I'm just going to try to get through this one as quickly and painlessly as possible, even though it is made of pain. So to that end, let's go to the then segment. We begin with Lisa telling Dean, many episodes ago, "I know what I want, but I can't have it." And golly, doesn't that sound like some of Cass's final words to Dean? Isn't that a kicker? She can't have what she wants because of how Dean lives, but Cass only thought he couldn't have what he wanted. Same exact thing Lisa wanted. Then we cut to Dean's explanation to Ben about how just because you love somebody doesn't mean you should stick around and ruin their life. And Ben reminding Dean that they are his family too, or at least Ben thinks of him as family. And that's a problem for Dean. He does not want to ruin this kid's life. And then it cuts to the reminder of dragons and Dr. Vizyak, the woman who gave Dean the fragment of the Sword of Brunswick to kill the dragons with. We get a reminder of Cass's stakes in all of this, that he's trying to stop Raphael from starting the apocalypse again, and he has started a pact with Crowley to get power and started a civil war in heaven in order to give them the time that they would need to access that power. And Dean's last week accusing Cass of working with Crowley to go after Purgatory together. Because Dean doesn't know what the actual stakes are. It's not just Raphael will kill Cass if he doesn't have this power. It's Raphael will restart the apocalypse and you and Sam will become meat suits who will have to kill each other. Like, the whole season hinges on Sam and Dean not having that information. And it's just stupid. You know, people complain about fanfics as being contrived and stuff. Well, Season 6 of Supernatural certainly is. We're shown Cass threatening Crowley to stay the hell away from Sam and Dean, or he will tear their whole arrangement down. And we end with a quick reminder of Cass's conversation with Dean at the very end of last week's episode, where Dean begs Cass not to go through with his plan. Otherwise, he's going to have to do what he has to do to stop Cass. Cass just apologizes and flies away. And then we come to now. We open to the noises of a typewriter on March 15th, 1937 in Providence, Rhode Island. A storm rages outside as a man drinks a lot of whiskey and finishes typing up his novel, types the words, "The End," and a door creaks open. He's scared of what might be slowly creeping into his office and pulls a gun out of a desk drawer. There's nothing out in the hallway. He pours himself another big glass of whiskey and he's like shaking as he drinks it. And then something comes smashing through his window. We only see it in shadow. But he apologizes to it, tells him, "We didn't know, I'm sorry." And then he's pushed backwards across his desk and we see him fall to the ground and a giant blood spatter hits his manuscript, Hunter of the Dark by H.P. Lovecraft. So this is H.P. Lovecraft and apparently how he died, via monster attack. And then we cut to the title card. We go to Bobby's house, where Sam and Dean are both researching, and it's clearly the morning after Cass came and had his little chat with Dean. Sam is saying, "Well, you tried," and Dean's like, "Yeah, a fat lot of good it did." He's got a book in his hands, but he's not even paying attention to it. He's just probably rehashing that conversation over and over again, wondering where he went wrong. Dean can't understand why Cass would have even come if he wasn't gonna be open to having his mind changed, or they're having no luck looking through all of Samuel's journals for any information, even though he was the one who they knew who knew more about purgatory than anyone else. When Bobby comes down and says, "Well, it's not about the journals we have, it's about the one we're missing." Apparently when Cass popped in, he stole the journal of one Moisha Campbell of the New York Campbells, which is news to Sam and Dean. They're wondering how they can get that journal back to know what Cass stole it for. Bobby said, "Well, we could just read the copy I made," because he's paranoid about everything. Apparently, Moisha Campbell went to talk to Howard Phillips about the events of March 10th, 1937. So this is 5 days before we saw him die. Dean's like, "Okay, well, who's this Phillips guy?" And Bobby informs him that Phillips isn't his last name. His last name is Lovecraft. And Sam recognizes H.P. Lovecraft immediately. And for some unhinged and unknown reason, Sarah Gamble thought Dean would not recognize the name H.P. Lovecraft, being a fan of horror in general and a fan of musicians that have written songs literally based on H.P. Lovecraft works, like Metallica. Like, how do you not? It's one of the most just mind-bendingly stupid things that Sarah Gamble has ever written, to make Dean make this joke about how he doesn't know who H.P. Lovecraft is because he was too busy having sex with women. Like, it makes him sound like Ghost Facers level stupid. Like, no. Dean is the one who's always taunting Sam for not knowing their pop culture histories surrounding all things that are even hunting adjacent in the most remote fashions, including horror as a genre of everything. And so, no, I hate this line, but yet I have to watch it. So everybody else has to hear about it. And I got that, you know, they needed to introduce the concept of who H.P. Lovecraft is to the viewers. But to do it by making Dean a fucking moron just never sits well with me. And I hate that. A couple extra little lines and approaching it from a different angle, and you wouldn't have to make Dean out as a moron douchebag. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Bobby summarizes the works of Lovecraft as heavily involving opening doors to other dimensions to let scary things through. And Dean at least understands that concept as being similar to what Cass is trying to do cracking purgatory. We then cut to Ben reading a book about Cthulhu, which is just on point and probably something Dean may have influenced him to purchase, you know? Zero continuity on Dean not knowing who H.P. Lovecraft is when he knows who every other horror influencer in the last century or two is. It just, no. The fact that Dean, I don't know what the logic could possibly be for him denying knowing who H.P. Lovecraft is, but it makes no sense. Downstairs, Lisa and her new boyfriend are enjoying watching a sporting event. She brings him a beer and they're just happily relaxing together on the sofa. When the front door is blown open and two men come forcing their way into the house, one grabs Lisa, the other one kills her boyfriend while Ben is looking on from upstairs. He is smart enough to run back to his room and lock the door because these are demons. His first thing is he calls Dean. This time, unlike last time when he was ignoring Ben's phone calls, Dean answers immediately. He's like, hey, Ben, probably looking grateful to it for a distraction, but only for a second until Ben cuts him off and just starts explaining there's men in the house. One of them killed Matt and one of them's got mom. Dean starts rattling off a list. Did you see their eyes? What are they doing now? And Ben doesn't know anything. Did you see their teeth? This is important, Ben. Come on. Can you get to the shotgun I left in your mom's closet? Ben can't. He's in his room. Dean is out of options to give Ben. He tells Ben to go to his window and jump. He knows it's the second floor, but it's his best chance to survive. Ben gets the window open. Dean tells him, I'm on my way now. I'm going to get you and your mom, I promise. And Ben does not respond because before he can get out the window, his door is blasted down and he is captured. And it's Crowley that answers. He tells Dean they need to have a chat. Dean is threatening Crowley, you let them go right now or I'm going to kill you. Crowley's just taking this all very casually. He just wants Dean to back off, and he'll release Lisa and Ben unharmed if Dean just stands down. When Dean hangs up, he tells Sam and Bobby the details. Lisa and Ben keep breathing as long as we sit on our thumbs. We don't get ourselves involved. They walk free. But also, they're giving Crowley and Cass time to crack purgatory in the meantime, which is not part of the plan. Sam asks the poignant question, do you think Cass knows about this? And Dean looks very unhappy as he says, we have to assume he does, because it's all one big plan now, Cass and Crowley. And God, what a feeling of betrayal that must be. Dean tells them that he is going after Lisa and Ben. Sam wants to come with to help. And Dean's like, no, you and Bobby stay here. Focus on finding out everything you can about Lovecraft and what the deal was with Purgatory, because we cannot drop the ball on this. We have to stop them from cracking Purgatory. And Dean just can't let anything happen to Lisa and Ben because of that. Bobby says he can handle that on his own. He goes off in search of details about Lovecraft, while Dean and Sam summon up a little help to handle finding Lisa and Ben. They call Balthazar. He is initially very displeased to have been summoned by them. Sam opens with, Crowley's alive. And Balthazar processes that for a moment and then says, okay, well, Cass already told me that. When he's unfazed by that, Dean lets him know about Cass's deal with Crowley to go halves on all the souls in purgatory. And Balthazar really doesn't know anything about that. But he tries to pretend he already knew about that. Like, oh yes, yes, of course. But Sam calls him out. Dean tries to explain that Crowley took two people who were important to him. Balthazar's like, why should I care? And Dean's like, because if there's a shred of decency in you, you will care. Dean just wants to save these two innocent people. Balthazar says, fair enough. And disappears, and they think that they're just getting the blow off from him. Since they think they've failed at that, Sam suggests maybe we should just call Cass. Maybe he doesn't know anything about this. Maybe he'll be just as upset about Crowley's actions as you and give you the information to get them back. Dean argues vehemently against this. He's like, no. Regardless, Cass has cast his lot with Crowley. We're not touching him again. Bobby is in the apartment of some guy who is a huge H.P. Lovecraft fan and posing as a reporter getting information about his life. Apparently, this man owns a large collection of H.P. Lovecraft's personal letters, and Bobby asks him about Lovecraft's later years, particularly anything that happened around March 10th, 1937. And the guy's like, wait a second, are you working with the other guy? And Bobby's like, what other guy? He describes somebody that we all know as Cass. And Bobby tells him, no, we're competitors. And the guy is like, oh, okay, I get it. Two competitive articles going against each other. So he agrees to tell Bobby exactly what he told the other guy. Apparently, Lovecraft had a dinner party with some of his colleagues who were also black magic worshippers with him. They had a plan to open a doorway into another dimension. Bobby is horrified at this. He's like, why would he do that? And the guy can't understand. He's like, to see what's out there. Maybe it's friendly. And Bobby's like, it's never friendly. Which, in his experience, yeah, no, it's never friendly. Bobby asked if the spell worked, and the guy jokes, well, there was no mention of Cthulhu in the morning paper, so the assumption is no, it didn't work, but yeah, we know it worked. The guy wants to show Bobby the letters written about the event, but when he goes to open it, there's nothing in there, and he's very confused. They were in here. Where'd they go? And Bobby jokes, there's no way some invisible guy just came in and stole them. That would be silly, because that's probably what Cass did, reminding us that he did the same thing to them, stealing Moshe Campbell's journal in the first place to find this guy. So Bobby did a little research independently of having those notes from the party and found that every guest who was at that party was either dead or disappeared within a year. The only member of the household that survived until the present was the small son of the housekeeper, who was 9 at the time and has now been locked in a mental ward ever since. He's 83 at the time this was aired. As Sam is talking to Bobby on the phone, and Bobby asks, oh, how are things there? And Sam's like, oh, nothing much. We are just making a few inquiries. And he's standing outside a barn on Bobby's property. And from inside, you can hear noises that sound like somebody getting beat up real bad. So they think they're not getting help from angels. So they've turned to summoning demons to beat up for information on Crowley. Bobby asks how Dean is. And Sam is like, about how you'd expect. He's, without hesitation, turned back to torture. You remember how in season 4 he was basically, don't make me do this, you can't make me do this, to torture Alistair for information? And it was a big wrenching experience for him to even agree to do it. And he just was at the point where he was like, no, I never want to do this again. And now he's like, without hesitation, doing it again. He needs this information. He's going to use it without even blinking to save people he cares about. This is what he's been driven to by Cass. This is the exact opposite of what Cass ever wanted when he tried to keep Dean out of it and safe right from the start. Cass wanted Dean to be able to stay at Lisa's and just rake leaves and never have to hunt again and never even have to think about monsters or hunting again. And all of his efforts to keep Dean safe and out of it have led here. He's right in the thick of it. The bodies of several demons litter the ground in this big warehouse building. It's filled with random car parts and shelves, and Dean's got a big old devil's trap painted on the floor. already killed several demons who did not give him the information he wanted, so they strap another one into the chair. The demon pleads that he doesn't know anything, and Dean's like, yeah, we'll see. Dean takes a swig of whiskey as Sam comes in and pleads with Dean to just take a break. You're running on whiskey and coffee, and this can't be healthy for you. You need some rest. Sam volunteers to take over if Dean doesn't want to just let go of this particular plan. But Dean doubles down like, no, as long as he's got Ben and Lisa, I'm going to keep doing what it takes to find them. Dean tells Sam that whatever is happening to Lisa and Ben is 100% on him. It's his fault because he even knew them as people and lived with them for a year and thought he could just have that life. And it was his greed, apparently, about that, that, you know, he's using to blame himself for everything that's happened to them now, which is just, ugh, I get it, Dean, but my God. But Sam kind of gets it, and he leaves Dean to torture his demons in peace, and does the one thing that Dean said that he refused to do. He prays to Cass for help. Sam's like, I don't know if you have anything to do with this Ben and Lisa thing, but if you have any heart whatsoever, bring them back to us, please. And we see that Cass was standing there, invisible, watching Sam pray to him, watching Sam beg him to help them. And then Cass disappears and reappears at Crowley's. And we find out that it was just from Sam in that moment that Cass found out that Crowley had kidnapped Ben and Lisa. Cass is like, I told you. And yes, Crowley's like, not to touch Sam and Dean. I respect that. I didn't touch them. I just need to find a way to keep them off my back. Because as long as Sam and Dean are searching for Lisa and Ben, they won't be searching for you and me. And we can proceed forth. Cass demands to know where they're being held. Crowley won't tell him. Cass tries to demand that Crowley not harm them. And Crowley's like, no, you've maxed out on putting humans out of bounds. Our plans are too big and too important. We cannot care about these people anymore. The only thing that can save them now is Cass finding purgatory. Cass gets a notification via Angel Radio and tells Crowley he'll be back, and goes to a forest to meet with Balthazar. It was Balthazar paging him. He's got some questions he wants answered. Balthazar very pointedly asks Cass if he's working with the King of Hell. Cass tries to deny it, and Balthazar just laughs. Tells him he's a terrible liar. He kind of is. Cass comes clean and tells him it's a means to an end, and Balthazar's like, oh, absolutely. But what is the end here? What are you all working for? Cass says it's a means to an end to win the war. And Balthazar lays out the facts. So you're going to suck up all those souls into yourself. You'll be the vessel for it. All that power. Cass says it's the only way. And Balthazar's like, or, you know, it could be too much for you to contain. And you could just explode and take, quote, a sizable chunk of the planet with you. And that sounds kind of worse than the apocalypse, doesn't it? This season has already taught us about the power of just one human soul and what Sam was like without his, and marking human souls and touching human souls and angels powering up enough to bring Sam and Dean back from the 1850s or whatever. With one human soul's power. Cass just flat out denies that that would happen. Balthazar demands to know if this really is risk-free. And Cass just doesn't answer that. He just asks Balthazar, I need to know, are you with me or against me? Balthazar laughs and tells him, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. I've already sided with you this whole time. I'm on your side. But when he's assured of Balthazar's allegiance, Cass asks him how he even heard about all of this. Apparently he's been so far under the radar with his Crowley side of the work that even his closest confidants did not know about it. So we assume Rachel didn't either. And when she got killed a few weeks ago, in case that wasn't completely clear. Balthazar tells Cass that his, quote, howler monkeys told him because they're quite worked up about all this kidnapping business. And Cass knows that. He's already gotten prayers from Sam and knows Dean is torturing demons over it and very upset about it. And he's upset about it, too. But as yet, he does not know where Lisa and Ben are being held. That becomes his big priority over finding Purgatory right now. Meanwhile, Bobby has found the man who had been that little 9-year-old boy at H.P. Lovecraft's door opening ceremony way back in 1937. He's a very old man now, and the first question out of his mouth is, "Are you sure you're not with that other reporter with the coat?" Bobby realizes just how far behind the ball he is here. It's a lot easier to get places and interview people when you can just angel your way everywhere rather than having to drive. And I do think it's just a little bit interesting that Cass, later in this episode, will prove that he has the power to alter people's memories, to wipe their minds of certain memories. And yet, he did not wipe the minds of either of these people he interviewed about even having interviewed him, knowing that Bobby or Sam or Dean would come in search of these people. Or maybe he just thought taking the book itself was enough to cover his tracks. But the fact that he isn't actively trying to cover his tracks, even after we saw that he is still spying invisibly on the Winchesters and has to be aware that they are trying to catch up with where he is, he might just be supremely overconfident in his own ability to stay out ahead of them. But he did have the power to hide his tracks better, and he, for whatever reason, chose not to. Does he want to get caught maybe a little bit? Is this his way of dragging his feet? But even this old man who spent his life in an asylum knows that Cass had been lying to him, not who he says he was. The man has apparently been asked about that night many times, and twice now in a day. He's like, they all said it failed. But then he leans in and asks Bobby if he believes in monsters. Bobby tells him yes. The man tells him, you go saying that people lock you in here for the rest of your life. He was 9 years old. He didn't know that you don't tell people the truth about monsters or they think you're crazy. That's why he's been locked away. For telling the truth. The man insists that the spell worked. The door opened and something came through. And it was invisible, so nobody knew that it came through. He was the only one who knew. Bobby asks him how. Because it went into his mother, and she was never the same after that. His mother was possessed by whatever came through from Purgatory. Shortly after that, his mother disappeared, and he never saw her again, and then everyone else who was at that party started dying. Bobby tells him, I'm sorry about your mom. And the man's like, nobody has ever told me that. Thank you. And he's just so pleased about that. He asks Bobby if he wants to see a picture of his mother. And this man pulls out a picture of him and his mom. And Bobby is shocked with recognition. Back in the warehouse, with the current demon strapped in the chair, Dean draws up a vial full of something in a syringe and walks into the devil's trap. But as he steps over the edge of it, something on his boot breaks the devil's trap. And Dean doesn't notice, but the demon does. The demon takes full advantage of his returned power, no longer trapped there, flings Dean across the room with his mind, breaks the straps holding him to the chair, and attacks. He's about to choke Dean to death when his eyes light up and he gets smited from behind by Cass. Dean is kind of shocked about this, but the first words out of his mouth are, I didn't ask for your help. He's still pissed at Cass. Big time pissed. Dean asks why Cass is there. Cass says that he had no idea that Crowley would take Lisa and Ben. Dean does not believe that. Cass is shocked that Dean doesn't just believe him, and Dean's like, I don't believe anything you say. Cass throws Dean's own words back at him. I thought you said we were like family. I feel the same way. Shouldn't trust run both ways. And it's like, well, Cass, you extended Dean zero trust. First, you've got to give trust to accept it back. Dean trusted you and you broke that trust. How is he supposed to trust you now? Cass says he does everything Dean asks and always comes when he calls. And it's like, liar. All season long, Dean has been begging for your help and you've just not shown up. Or he's been begging you to just give him answers and you've had those answers and lied to his face about it. How is he supposed to trust you? And why? How is he even supposed to believe what you're saying now when it's blatantly obvious to Dean that it's not truthful? Even your plea for understanding here isn't truthful. Cass only asked for this one thing, to trust in his plan, and that he's earned that amount of trust. And Dean's like, no, that's a terrible plan. Cass is promising that he will find Lisa and Ben and bring them back, but he wants Dean to stand behind him, to be on his side. And Dean is like, wait, you're asking me to stand down? That's the same offer Crowley made me to guarantee Ben and Lisa's safety. And Cass seems surprised at this again. He's been wrong-footed in every interaction he's had with Dean since the truth came out. Dean just turns his back on Cass. Like, he's just overcome with emotions. He's just broken about all of this. And Cass just watches him and is just like, you know, he's sacrificed everything, this whole plan for Dean. And Dean has no idea how much Cass has sacrificed and how much Dean is like, none of this is what he would have wanted at all. And Cass just flaps off, feeling heartbroken that Dean wouldn't do this for him, wouldn't agree to his ridiculous plan. He's just so far in it that he can't even see why Dean is just so horrified by this plan. Meanwhile, Bobby goes to a little cabin out in the woods, hidden away, with sigils painted on the door, and finds Eleanor Vizhak there. She, or her body, was that boy's mother, but she herself is the thing that came through from purgatory. Eleanor invites him in and offers him a drink, asks how Bobby found her. He tells her they weren't together long, but he knows everything about her, including her safe houses, and he warns her that this one is not that safe. He found it quite easily. Bobby tells her that he knows who she is, that she's not from Milwaukee, and shows her the picture of her body and her young son from 1937, or 1936, I believe, is the date on the back of the picture. Regardless, a picture that shouldn't contain her. Bobby's like, yeah, it would have been nice to know. And you kind of lied about your age. And she's like, yeah, by about 900 years. And then Bobby starts asking her what her game is. What does she want there? Why has she stayed so long? Eleanor insists that they're not all alike. She doesn't have a long game that she's trying to play on humanity or anything. She just wants to enjoy her life. Bobby accuses her of having killed H.P. Lovecraft, and she's like, oh, come on, that guy couldn't barely even write hello. And that she has spent the last 75 years trying to keep the door to purgatory closed because she doesn't want the earth to be turned into a bloody wasteland. She likes it there. She's like, why do you think I gave Dean that sword? She was like, you guys were supposed to kill the damn dragons. She was trying to stop Eve from coming through. Bobby warns her that this whole plan came down to one angel. Just leave out the demon for now. But he wants purgatory and he's looking for you. He's warning her that she's got a target on her back. And if Bobby could find her, there's no way that Cass couldn't, because Bobby's been two steps behind Cass this whole time. For all we know, Cass has been following Bobby from this point, trying to let him lead him to Eleanor. Bobby tells Eleanor that the only way he can stop Cass is to get ahead of him. He wants to know how to open the door, and Eleanor is like, no, no, I'm not telling anyone that. Not you, not him, nobody. Bobby tells Eleanor, if I found you, he'll find you. Let me at least protect you. Let me take you somewhere safe. And she laughs at this. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself. What she tells him is, Bobby, you're just a man. As if that was no additional protection whatsoever. That's sort of the same thing that Cass was trying to tell Dean when Dean's like, I'm going to get you one way or another. I'm going to stop you. Cass was like, you're just a human. What are you going to do? And honestly, they both should have listened to those humans. Later that night, Sam is in Bobby's kitchen pouring himself a glass of whiskey when Balthazar appears. Balthazar is like, I thought that was your brother's thing, drinking your feelings away. But Balthazar is there to talk. He's there to let them know that even though he's going to live to regret this, and I wish he did live to regret it, because he wouldn't have, but he doesn't get to live much longer, he's on their team. So Sam brings Dean into this conversation, who doubts Balthazar's honesty. Why should we believe you? Balthazar claims he has a shred of decency and is offended when Sam and Dean doubt that. Balthazar tells them that he asked Cass some questions and didn't like his answers, and Cass seems too sure of himself for a guy who's wants to swallow a million nuclear reactors. And I don't think Dean really knows how to process that information. Like, he knew Cass was trying to crack Purgatory, but what's this about swallowing all these souls and going Chernobyl? He doesn't quite know how to put all those pieces together yet. But Balthazar has also taken the liberty of finding Lisa and Ben. It took a while. He knows where they are, but the downside is that he cannot get them because they're behind angel warding. But he can take them to the location where they are. Crowley apparently doesn't trust Cass not to have gone and fetched them himself. And Balthazar states that marriage is apparently going swimmingly, which is probably news to Sam and Dean. As far as they knew, everything was going right according to Cass's plans with Crowley. But this gives Cass that little shred of credibility, because Cass really didn't know that Crowley was going to do that. And Crowley took measures to protect Cass from discovering it. Balthazar drops them off in a alleyway by a industrial-looking building and tells them, God be with you and what have you. Yeah, I think God is probably rooting for the most possible chaos to happen. As they're standing there, a demon wanders out of the building and Sam and Dean attack him without warning. Kill him. Just dump his body. It's a very large building, and Sam and Dean split up, because that always goes well. Sam almost immediately gets attacked by a demon and knocked out and dragged off somewhere and locked in a storage room. Meanwhile, Dean finds Ben and Lisa tied to a post being guarded by three demons in the room with them, who hear a clattering outside that room, and one of them goes to check out what it is, and then we hear some more fighty noises out in the hall, and the other two demons go to check what it is. And one of them immediately gets launched back through the door and thrown down a flight of stairs. Because it's Dean. He didn't get clobbered by demons like Sam did. Lisa sees Dean through the doorway, wrestling with the other demon, got a big knife, and he kills it, kicks it back through the door. And Lisa's like, oh, thank God. Dean cuts them free, and as soon as they are free, he starts leading them out of the room. Lisa grabs the knife from him, pulls Ben away from him, and holds the knife to Ben's throat. And Lisa blinks her eyes, and they are demon black. She's been possessed. She tells Dean that Crowley had her possess Lisa as insurance because he was sure that Dean would try and come for her. The demon possessing Lisa whispers to Ben that you know she's awake in here. She can hear Lisa thinking. Dean orders Ben not to listen to her. Like, whatever she says, don't listen to it because it's lies. It's the demon talking. Lisa's like, I was just going to tell him that you're his real daddy. Dean looks shocked and appalled by this. And I need to pause here because the demon then immediately says, yeah, no, you're not. And some people have used this as proof that Dean is Ben's biological father. And I can't see it that way still. And I will link to my little essay that I wrote. It's in the tag for this episode as to why I still do not believe, and as Kripke has always insisted, Dean is not Ben's biological father, because the rest of the narrative just doesn't make sense. But I wrote a very concise, I think I cover all the points about what people have objected to over the years, but it boils down to Lisa is not a liar. I don't think she would have spent a year with Dean and just continued to lie to him that he was not Ben's father if she even reasonably believed he could be. And it seems like the sort of thing that in the aftermath of the apocalypse, where Dean saw his half-brother, possessed by Michael, dragged into hell in his place, technically, you know, he was the one who was supposed to be possessed by Michael, because it's a bloodline, that if he had any reason to believe, any shadow of doubt that Ben could be his child, he would have warned Lisa about the possibility of being used by angels. I don't think he would have left Ben vulnerable in that way if he believed that Ben was of his bloodline. I just don't think that he could have stood for that. I think he would have pleaded with Lisa for the truth and told her exactly why. I don't think that that would have been left untalked about between them after he'd lived with them for a year, and when he showed up completely devastated almost immediately after the events at Stahl Cemetery. I just don't think either of them would have let that just slide. So I don't think this is shocking information for Dean. I think it's being used to hurt and distract and make Ben upset in this moment. Dean tries to defend Lisa's honor about the things that the demon is saying about her, that she's a slut, she doesn't know who your real daddy is, and blah, blah, blah. Then is like, no, she thinks you're the worst mistake she ever made. She regrets ever having met you. And we know that's not true. She talked about Dean for years to her friends before Dean came back into her life. And she doubles down on that by telling Ben that it was the second worst mistake she made after keeping Ben. And it's like, we all know how much Lisa loved Ben and how she built her whole life around caring for him. She gave him a great life. So these are lies that this demon is telling. Dean again tries to reassure Ben that it's the demon talking. It's not your mom. She's lying to you. And Lisa turns it back on Dean again, says the C-minus lay with 10 miles of daddy issues. And yeah, the daddy issues is true. But Lisa had raved that Dean was the best weekend of her life to all of her friends, to the point where they were ogling him like, ooh, I wonder what this guy is like. So I think that part's the lie. The lie, unless the truth would hurt more. That's how demons work. The demon again tells Ben, she's begging me to kill you. Like, then I'd be free of this boy. No, Lisa is not begging the demon to kill her son. Dean slowly reaches into his pocket and grabs a flask of holy water and then gets Ben's attention and is like, look at me. Look at me, Ben. You're going to be just fine. And then flings the holy water at Lisa. And it burns her, and she releases Ben, and Dean tells him to run. Dean wrestles with her, gets the knife out of her hand, tells Ben to pick it up, and he does. And Lisa taunts Dean, like, you don't want to hurt poor Lisa. You won't fight me. You won't hit me. Of course he won't. He doesn't want to hurt Lisa. He knows she's still in there. Dean just backs up slowly and starts reciting an exorcism. And tries not to let Lisa get too close to him. But she keeps fighting back. She slugs him hard and Dean falls onto a table and gives Lisa a chance to approach. Dean's doing a good job. He's finally memorized that exorcism. But the demon inside Lisa is fighting hard against it, manages another attack on Dean, tries to choke him. She orders Dean to stop the exorcism and tells him that she's warning him. And he's like, what are you going to do, you black-eyed bitch? And she reaches around him onto the table and grabs a big old piece of metal and stabs herself in the stomach with it. And is like, yeah, now you exorcise me? She dies. What are you going to do about that, idiot? And Dean knows that if he exorcises her, she's going to die. And he looks over at Ben, who's looking at him like, you're going to save her, right? You're going to do something to save her? And Dean just looks broken and keeps reciting the exorcism. And Lisa starts bleeding even before the exorcism is finished and falls to the ground as the demon leaves her. And they run over to her, and she's still alive. Dean tries to call Sam for help, but he's still passed out, locked in that room. Dean doesn't really have time to go looking for Sam right now. He gives Ben the order, and Ben is just staring at his mom in horror, like, how can this be happening? He's traumatized. He's just a kid. But Dean needs to slap him out of it. He tells Ben he's got to be strong. His mom's life depends on it. Dean orders him to get the salt gun out of the duffel bag because Dean's got to carry his mother. And if anything comes near them, Ben has to shoot it. And Ben is like, but what? Dean orders him to just go. Not the time for questions. And if you'll recall, a very long time ago, the beginning of season 6, Dean was furious with Ben for looking at his guns, I think maybe even this specific salt gun, and told him that he would never shoot a gun. And here he is, ordering Ben to pick up that gun, pushing Ben to do the one thing that Dean had been trying so desperately to protect Ben from ever having to do. So Ben is now armed with the salt shotgun and the demon knife as Dean carries Lisa out. Dean gives him a quick little lesson on how to fire the gun. Ben has no idea what he's doing. As they approach the stairs they need to take to get out of there, Dean yells for Ben because there's a guy coming down the stairs. He orders Ben to shoot him. And he does. The guy drops. But then Ben just stands there staring in horror at what he's done. He's like, Dean. Dean's like, come on, pull it together. We've got to get out of here. The phrase that gets Ben's attention and gets him moving again is, do you want your mother to die? Like, her life is riding on you following orders and moving right now. We hear a few more gunshots come around the corner as Dean emerges carrying Lisa again. Ben has had to shoot a couple more people. As they make it out onto the street, they hear Sam yelling out from behind a door, I'm in here. He puts Lisa down long enough to shoot the lock off the door and free Sam. And as soon as Sam is there, he orders Ben to give the gun to Sam so Ben doesn't have to kill again. But because they got Balthazar snapped there in the first place, it's not like they have a car. They gotta go find one to steal. Ben jumps in the front seat with Sam and Dean is taking care of Lisa in the back seat. Ben turns around. Dean reassures her that she's fine. We're almost to the hospital. She's fine. She's really not fine. Later in the hospital, next day, Dean is still sitting at her bedside. He's all but abandoned his quest to try and stop Cass from cracking purgatory. All he can think about is, this is my fault. She's in this bed, possibly dying because of me. And the fact that I put myself in her life at all, ever, and thought I could ever have this. Because of course I don't deserve nice things. I don't deserve to have this family or any family. Nobody should risk their lives for me because all I do is ruin everything I touch. And that's just how he feels right now. So, regardless of the plan Crowley had, it worked to completely distract Dean. Ben sits across the bed from Dean, and Dean looks over at him and with, like, tears in his eyes as Lisa's lying in the bed, and he tells Ben he's sorry, and Ben can barely look at him. He just gets up and leaves the room. But as he does, Cass is waiting there. Dean's like, "What are you doing here?" Dean is furious with Cass. Apparently, Lisa will be dead by midnight. She's not expected to survive her injuries. Cass tries to apologize, and Dean's like, "I don't care. Like, too little, too late. You could have told me where she was. You could have fetched her for me. You could have stopped Crowley from doing this in the first place. You could have just listened to me and backed the hell off this stupid plan. Everything about what you're doing right now, Cass, is just wrong in Dean's eyes. And he knows it. But he's still not going to stop." Cass understands, and he kind of expected Dean to feel that way. He tells Dean that he didn't come for him. He walks over and heals Lisa, assures Dean that she'll be fine now. And Dean just looks relieved, like horrified that they had to go through this at all because of him, that they were used as pawns by people he thought he could trust. He thought he could trust Cass. And this whole season has proven he can't to him. And Cass healing her was supposed to be an olive branch, proof that he's sorry about this, truly sorry. He thanks Cass and says, "I wish this changed anything." And Cass is like, "I know, so do I. But it doesn't, does it?" Dean still needs to stop Cass from cracking purgatory. Cass still needs to crack purgatory. And so we have an impasse. Because Dean might understand the plan now, but he has no idea why that plan. Why is this imperative? He thinks it's about some war in heaven. He doesn't know Cass started the war. He doesn't know that the whole thing has been to try and stop Raphael from restarting the apocalypse. That has been the primary objective of all of this. And if Cass would just tell him, things might go a lot different, or would have. But I think they're even beyond the point where that can work now. Cass tells Dean he just wanted to fix what he could. Dean's like, "Okay, well, there's one more thing you can do for me." And his eyes are just full of tears as he looks at Cass. Cass doesn't understand what else he could possibly do for Dean. He's given them back his family. That's all Dean's wanted, right? That's what Cass had been assuming since he walked away from Dean and left him to his peaceful, happy, hunter-free lifestyle with Lisa. He thought he was leaving Dean there to be happy and at peace. And here is Dean telling him, "I cannot be with these people. I'm a danger to their lives. They can't even remember me. I don't want them to know I even exist. Wipe me from their minds." That is what he asks of Cass. Cass thought he was leaving Dean here to be at peace. He's leaving Dean here to carry the burden of anguish, of the finality of his loss of that life that Cass had been trying desperately to preserve for him, meaning that everything Cass has done all season long to protect Dean and keep him out of this mess was for naught. It's all gone now, anything, but Cass is too far in it to back off, to say, whoa, wait, you mean everything I thought I was working to give you, and you just give it away like that? And it's just soul crushing for all of them. And yes, I know we all judge Dean for this lie he tells about being the guy who hit her and blah, 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 and her car's not wrecked. Like, she's going to get home and be like, "How'd I get here?" And she's going to find a dead guy in her house. Her boyfriend. Like, how do you explain that? Unless Cass went and cleaned that up too. Gotta assume he must have. Or Crowley's demons did. But we have to assume that Dean is judging himself harder than any of us would ever do for wiping their memories. He's trying to keep them safe, not from other monsters that might attack them. Whatever comes of that, you know. But they can't seek him out. Ben will never try to grow up to be a hunter. Ben will never have to hold this trauma in his mind and blame Dean for it. Or just blame himself for it. He'll never seek out that life because he doesn't even know it exists. It's the only thing he could do to make it so that, as far as Ben knows, he's never fired a gun. The one thing Dean swore that he would never, ever let Ben do. And he forced him to do it multiple times tonight to save their lives. So it's just truly a tragedy all around. And nobody will ever punish Dean for this as much as Dean does. Not any fan who looks at this and judges him harsh for messing with their memories. This is pretty much the final nail in the coffin of their relationship and any potential there ever will be to bring her back as a character, as some sort of endgame love interest, or bring Ben back as a hunter later down. No, they're done. One way or the other, they're out. And honestly, lucky them. Truly. As Dean gets back out to the car, Sam's waiting for him, and he tells Dean, "You have pulled some shady crap before, but this has got to be the worst." And Dean is heartbroken. And Sam tries to be like, "Oh yeah, whitewashing their memories. Take it from someone who knows, you know, like about having your memories messed with." Because Sam had his memories messed with when he was, Dean was lying to him about coming back soulless and all that. Dean cuts him off and's like, "If you ever talk about Lisa or Ben again, I will break your nose." Sam persists. He's like, "Dean." And Dean cuts him off again and looks over at him. And his eyes are just full of tears. And he's like, "I'm not kidding. Don't you ever mention them to me again." And Sam can see just how much this has broken Dean. How hurtful this decision was even to him. And he did not make this choice casually. Because remember, Sam bears some of the responsibility for all of this too. He made Dean promise, as his dying wish, to go to Lisa and Ben and beg them to take him in and live a normal white picket fence life with them and be grateful. And Dean never would have gone there. Soulless Sam, when he came back from hell, walked away, saw Dean there, and left, and lied to him for a year that he was back, and let Dean have that life. So regardless, Sam does carry some of the burden for this. Not emotionally, obviously, but, you know, he should. But it's all on Dean. Dean blames himself for all of it. He could have ignored Sam's dying wish and not gone to Lisa, and all of this could have been spared, but no. They drive off, and we cut back to Ellie Visiak's cabin. Late at night, she's got a bag packed. She steps outside, unlocks her car, is trying to sneak off to another safe house, but it's too late. Cass appears, touches her, and they both disappear. She's in trouble. And that is where the episode ends. So we're no closer to them actually cracking purgatory. But now Cass has his prize. He actually stopped. He probably could have swooped in and grabbed her up before Bobby even made it to her house. But Cass was busy dealing with Sam and Dean's problems that he caused, and trying to do what he could to make that right, but he had no intention of stopping in his quest. Just put it on hold for a few hours. All of this is just too heartbreaking from every direction, and leads us right into the events of the finale next week. And I don't even know what more to say about this one. I think I covered everything I wanted to while we were going through it. Huzzah! Dean and Cass wish that this fixed anything between them, but it doesn't. Being sorry about it doesn't fix it if you're not going to stop doing the thing that everybody wants you to stop doing, you know? Even Balthazar is not long for this world because now he's working double agent for the Winchesters. But it's all just heartbreaking because none of this had to happen. And yet it is. even if it's the exact opposite of what Cass ever wanted for Dean. He didn't want Dean involved and was adamant he not be touched from the start because Dean was still living that life of comfort and supposed happiness with Lisa and Ben. That was supposed to be his reward from saving the world from the apocalypse and all that, in Cass's mind. He was intent on letting Dean keep that he wouldn't be touched. Sam walked away from it. He didn't want that life for himself. He went right back to hunting. So, of course, Cass was okay letting Sam participate in their little scheme with Crowley. Crowley told Cass, I can get you a way to get the power you need to defeat Raphael, stop the apocalypse, protect Dean forever. You'll never even have to get him involved. We just have to get these souls from purgatory, and you'll have the power to do all of that. And now, Cass has slowly realized over the course of the season, Dean lost his little life of happiness and peace with Lisa. A long time ago now, Dean got roped into working for Crowley. He was never supposed to be doing that. He was supposed to be left alone and out of it. But of course, once Dean finds out what's going on, he can't stop. He got sucked in to fix soulless Sam. Cass found out that in his haste to put Sam back, he left out an important bit. He felt responsible for that. He couldn't get Sam's soul back. Dean resorts to talking to Death about it. Death gives him hints about beware of the souls and what that little angel is up to. And Dean still can't put the pieces together because he doesn't know about the instigating threat that prompted Cass. It wasn't the Civil War that started it. He started the Civil War to delay Raphael from restarting the apocalypse. Because if that happens, Dean's life really is over. And none of this will have made a damn bit of difference. That is the only shred that Cass has left to fight for, to continue hunting for these souls, for a way into purgatory to claim them for himself so he can use them to finally defeat Raphael. Because anything short of that means Dean is going to be possessed by Michael and the apocalypse will be restarted and Dean will have to kill Sam, possessed by Lucifer. Because that is the only way that it could possibly go if they restart the apocalypse. The world will end and Cass cannot let that happen, no matter the cost. And yet, he has not found a way to tell Dean that information. Because Dean would have felt very differently about everything that's happened during season 6 if he had known that. And he doesn't. Because Cass never told him. Crowley never told him that. And Crowley knew that. So, like, I don't know why Crowley strategically was keeping it from them. Because if they knew that, they would side with Cass and be like, hey, Cass, we're going to stop this. We did it once before. We're going to do it again. How? We don't know, but we'll find a way. And Crowley can't let Sam and Dean pull Cass away from him. Crowley wants that plan to work. He wants half the souls in purgatory for himself, to secure his own power base, to be too powerful for any other demon to threaten or overthrow. The throne of hell is a tenuous seat at best. Crowley wants a working partnership with whoever takes over for heaven. He wants it to be Cass. He thinks those souls, the power that they contain, will make Cass more in line with his own goals of just retaining stable power over their domains. Holy cow, that's just ridiculous. But that's where they're at. And that's the sticking point and why Cass can't turn back. You know, if only he had just told Dean what the real threat to him was, but he'd been trying so desperately to keep Dean out of it, to let Dean keep that safety net that he could return to when everything was over again and everything finally settled down, like Dean could just go back to that and have it all be fine again. And he can't. And now Cass had to be the one to make it an impossibility for Dean to ever walk back into that life. And that had to be as heartbreaking for Cass as it was for Dean. I just don't know what else to say about this one. So we'll leave it there. Until next week, when we will be watching the season finale and crying about it. Because we always do. Anyway. Here, I'm laughing. I'm like, yeah, this episode's going to just tear us to shreds. And I'm laughing at the end of it. Jesus. Anyway. Until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Blue Sky and Discord as MittensMorgul. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. Because I have so many thoughts and feelings about all of this. And just the general heartbreak of it. And how can you look at this and not see the pain that Cass must be feeling about this after last week's episode? He's got to be crushed, but just even more determined to fix what he can for Dean, to protect that last shred of remaining chance for Dean to be even remotely normal once all of this is over, keeping the fact of the apocalypse restarting to himself. And not telling Dean. Like, he's come so far, that's the only thing he has left to protect Dean from. I made a comment earlier in this episode about, like, how people are always mocking fan fiction, especially fan fiction that's based on a miscommunication or a plot that's based on a miscommunication, as being a really flimsy, kind of hand-wavy sort of plot. And it's like, literally, that is the entirety of season 6. If Cass had just come out and told the truth, season 6 could not have happened. It required that extremely flimsy lie and the hiding of that truth in order for the entire plot to work. So it makes that flimsy lie the foundation of the entire season. What's the lie? It's Cass trying to protect Dean. That's it. That is the foundation of all of season 6. And it's just heartbreaking. He did all of it for one man. You know, he drapes himself in the flag of heaven. But no, he does it all for one man. Truly, he does. And I don't even know if Cass realizes it or can acknowledge that yet. He hasn't really looked that closely at why he feels this strongly about this one thing. Why he's made it his life mission. Because I don't think he knows. I don't think he gets it. He thinks he's trying to, for the greater good and saving heaven and saving the world and stopping the apocalypse. No, he could have done that with Dean's help, but he didn't. He chose this other way for one specific reason, to protect Dean. All of it. The whole season falls apart if he tells Dean the truth about it. The whole entire plot falls apart. So it couldn't have happened. Imagine that Destiel was the linchpin of season 6. Because it was. Even if they didn't intend it to be, that's what they wrote. That's the story they told. Anyway. Have a good one, everyone. Yeah. Oh, so cavalier about that one. Have a good one after that.